after the iPhone 8 series, they got rid of the home button. And I've played around once or twice with somebody's iPhone 10. And I'm fairly good at gestures, but for the life of me, I couldn't figure out the damn gesture that they now have for substituting for the home button. So I just want to ask if there's anyone out there with an iOS 10 or above, have you found figuring out that gesture a major problem, or is it something you practice it and after a little while it becomes second nature? Because I'm really scared of these other phones just because of how important the home button has been to me.
Two swipes and you hear a...
You definitely get used to it, and what it is, David, is the key is not to rush, that you're putting your finger way at the bottom of the screen and coming up. It really does become second nature. You don't even think about looking for that home, you're pushing on the button, yeah. And just come from the bottom. The key is just not to rush.
Am I doing the app switcher when you have to do it twice? Is that
it comes
okay?
Up actually three times.
Yeah, and three.
Big. You'll actually hear noises, and you'll have to be more tactile.
I have a 10, and I also have an old iPod, which I use. And so one has a button, and one has the newer technology. And I don't think you'll really have a problem with it. I'm starting to think I like it better than the button, and I never thought I would. I find it a very quick, easy gesture. I would not let that dissuade you from moving up to the technology if you wanted to. There's a small learning curve, but I don't think you'd have any problem with it.
The one thing that people will complain sometimes is that they're so used to having the home button that will also be their, you know, for their identity, to unlock it. But they can keep the iPhone in their pocket if they have an actual home button. But, you know, for the most part, I don't use it to do it that much, and I can, even in my pocket, unlock it with the, you know, with the swipe. So it's really odd. But you get used to it really quickly.
I'm just wondering what people's experience with downloading NVDA is. I haven't been able to download it. I spent a lot of time. As I understand, it's open source software, but I see no proof of that.
It is open source. I've never had a problem downloading
Normally
it.
Normally, it's very easy to download.
It went to SourceForge. That explains a bit of it.
It's on SourceForge.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I've had lots of trouble in the past in general with SourceForge downloads.
Yep, thank you.
I recently purchased an Office 365 subscription. I had 2016, the standalone package, because of, when I was working with David, spell checker didn't work well, and a bunch of other things didn't seem to work nearly as well on 2016 Office as it did in 365. So I made the plunge, and mostly happily, although it updates a lot, and I think that's running in the background sometimes slows me down, so it seems to be constantly updating. With the 365 subscription, you get a one terabyte of cloud storage called OneDrive with them. With that terabyte of online storage, they have various options for how to use that. And I also ultimately had Microsoft set it up so that when I work on a Word or any document in my document folder, it actually leaves it locally on my computer and it sends a copy of it to the cloud. I could access it on the cloud or I can access it locally on my computer. So if I make a change in either location, the document will change. And I was just wondering if anybody had any experience with that or whether that might be a mistake for me to set it up that way that I'm not anticipating.
No mistake. In Word, in Excel, in PowerPoint, you know, you can go into the options and you can just change the default location. Like for one or two of mine, I have my default location for saving set as Dropbox for sort of similar reasons, so then it goes straight to the cloud. So, you know, no reason not to do that.
But when you do it, David, your Dropbox, that document is sent to Dropbox. It's no longer on your local drive the way Dropbox worked.
In both places.
It is still in both places?
Yeah, and it's in both places in OneDrive also.
Dropbox does now offer the option for storing everything in the cloud and not on your computer. And I actually switched to that just to experiment with it. I had a couple hundred gigabytes of stuff in Dropbox, and I told it I didn't want those files stored on my computer anymore. And it works absolutely fine if you're, you know, not squeamish about the idea of things only being stored in the cloud. It took maybe 30 seconds to open a really big document that I had, but most things, like if it's a small spreadsheet or a Word document or something, it opens up almost instantly. And it's kind of neat the way that works. But you have that option, and unless you tell it to do that, it definitely saves things both locally and on Dropboxes in the cloud.
In terms of the location, and I'm not sure, Bob, if this is what you were referring to, but by default, if you'd find it easier to get to your OneDrive files similar to what Dropbox does, for instance, in File Explorer, if you go into your local drive and then your users folder, and then under your username, there should be a OneDrive folder there. And so you should just,
right.
Okay.
Right. So I actually made a shortcut on my desktop for that OneDrive.
That works too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you.
One thing OneDrive's lousy at, you know, if you've used Dropbox and you've ever, you know, wanted to share a file or a folder with another person, you know, it's very easy in Dropbox just to, you know, go to the applications key, find a copy Dropbox link and paste it into an email and send it off to people. With OneDrive, it's easy to find that same thing and stick it in an email and send it to people. I have not been able to figure out yet, if you're the recipient, how you get a hold of that file or folder. So that's a very useful thing in Dropbox that's very basic and very useful that does not seem to work very well at all in OneDrive.
I have a question then about this 365. When you create a file in 365, where is the file actually being stored? Is it being stored on OneDrive or on your documents folder? Where is it actually going?
Like if you save it, for instance, that OneDrive folder that I was talking about that Bob has the shortcut to, that synchronizes over to the cloud. So it ends up being on both in that case.
You have to set up OneDrive. In other words, if you didn't set it up with 365, it would just be local. You have to...
The default is the same as in Office 2016. It's going to save local, and unless you change the default folder, it's going to save to your documents folder. Same as other versions of Office.
I've had nothing but trouble ever since I switched from Office 365. I first was using Office 2016, now I'm using 2019, which is still mostly 2016 programs. But I've had problems.
You've had nothing but problems since moving to 365?
No, the opposite direction. Problems with Office, the standalone version. Because I had used 365 for a few years and liked it very much. But at work, we had an announcement of the ability to get a copy of the standalone version for like $10. So I got it. And I guess I got what I paid for, because I in Outlook, and I even had Microsoft on my computer for 3 hours one day trying to fix this, and they were unsuccessful. I can open Outlook and I can go into my inbox and work. If I try to switch to another folder, it crashes to the point where sometimes I can use the task manager to close Outlook and continue along my way. Other times I have to reboot the computer. So that's one of the things that has driven me to begin using Gmail on the web more, which I'm going to talk about in my presentation later this afternoon.
I started getting all these messages from Gmail saying, enter my password. And I have a couple of different Gmail accounts. They popped up and then asked me for my password. And even when I put the password in, it didn't work. And so I wasn't sure what was wrong. So I called Microsoft Accessibility, and you have to go to Google and make your insecurity, you have to make your Google less secure in order for it to work with Outlook. So I had to do that for three different accounts, and it happened spontaneously.
That's correct. Gmail doesn't like to work with Outlook because it's considered less secure. There is another way around that. You can create something called an apps password, which is a little cumbersome to create. And you do it on the Google website, but once you've done that, that solves that problem. But if you don't do that, you do have to go into settings, and it's rather deep in the settings in Google, and you have to tell it it's okay to use less secure apps.
What is that called, Jerry? I mean, is there any downside to doing what you suggested?
I don't think there's a downside to it. It's called apps, APPS password. And if you Google it, just Google apps password, it'll bring you to the section. And you kind of have to read about it. And, you know, it's a bit of a process to get it set up because you have to tell it what device you're setting it up on, what the app is that you're using. So for example, you might say to it that you're setting it up on your iPhone and you're using it for the native iPhone mail program. And then it gives you a 16-digit password that it tells you where to put it. You have to put it into your accounts and passwords. And that solves the issue.